Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 31 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and I'm very pleased to say I have some great guests today. Rob, Duff, and Joe, otherwise known as the Midnight Boys from a free podcast. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Rob. It's nice to, join up with a fellow podcasting Rob out there in the world.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I like your name. There you go. Thanks for agreeing. Thanks for finding the time to be on the show. This is, a great bunch of episodes that we're going to talk about. So, let's just jump right in. So minute 31 begins with Marie continuing to talk about her own fairy tale and ends with Sally trying to explain. So basically, the way we left things off on Friday was that Sally and Marie were in the bookstore. They're in Shakespeare and Co. And they happen to notice that Harry is staring at them from personal growth. And then they start talking about a movie, which, is a Hitchcock movie, The Woman Vanishes. And this minute begins with Marie saying, then they fall madly in love. Then Sally says to her, also, he never remembers me. And then Harry interjects and goes, Sally Albright? Hi, Harry. And he goes, I thought it was you. It is. This is Marie. And as she's saying that, we see that Carrie Fisher, a.k.a. Marie, a.k.a. Princess Leia, just basically skulks away, leaving the two of them. And she goes, what's Marie? And then the two of them started a little bit of a conversation. How are you? Fine. How's Joe? Fine. I hear he's fine. You're not with Joe anymore? We just broke up. Aw, I'm sorry to hear that. It's too bad. Yeah, well, Yeah. So, what about you? I'm fine. How's married life? Not so good. I'm getting a divorce. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? What happened with you guys? When Joe and I started seeing each other, we wanted exactly the same thing. We wanted to live together. And that's the whole dialogue here. I mean, it's a very dialogue-heavy minute. With the two of them, having this somewhat inane conversation,
it's a very dialogue-heavy movie, right?
Yes, course. Yes, I mean,
not a lot of action scenes or car.
No, not like my last season where I did Die Hard. Die Hard has a little less dialogue, a lot more action. I guess maybe we wanted to see Harry, pull out a machine gun, start crawling through some ventilation, shafts or something like that. Who knows? But I mean, some of the thing about this movie is that the dialogue is great because it flows so well that it gives us a larger picture of what's really going on with these characters. Even the beginning of this minute when with Marie talking, we know a little bit about Marie, from what happened with her, just 2 weeks ago when we were talking about it. She's in a, I guess you can say, relationship. With a married man who she feels is, eventually going to leave his wife. But, everyone believes that he's not. But she's still looking for that fairy tale ending, which is very interesting that she's looking at it this way. You'd think that she'd be happy with what she has because she's hoping for the best there. But, we're shown a little bit into her mind that she herself also knows that this isn't something that's going to last. And that eventually, she still wants that fairy tale story. And maybe with, Miracle Max, who knows?
Is she the most romantic character, do you think? Like, do you think her viewpoint of all the, the four main leads, with the four main characters, do you think Marie is the one who has the most romantic view of the world?
I would actually say yes. I think she does. But she puts on, she has a mask on. It's something that you can hear here and there, but it's not something that you can clearly see. She doesn't want to show it to people. But I mean, you have this line, you have later on when she's sitting and talking with Jess, in the when they're in the restaurant, when they're trying to, fix the two of them up with Harry and Sally. She also realize there that she is looking for something more. She is much more romantic. I don't think Jess is very romantic with the way that he acts, and Harry and Sally, I don't know if they're really that romantic with the way that they're acting. So I would say yes. What do you guys think?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think early on this week, the reason I asked is early on this week kind of sets that up between, like, you know, when Harry and Sally first meet and they're just talking about, you know, platonic friendships, but also like love and how does it all work out? And they have very different views on that. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a theme that runs through it. But I would
agree with Marie's. But I mean, I see Harry, well, we all see Harry as more of a womanizer, you know, throughout the whole movie. You know, he's just looking to find a woman to spend time with, you know, which is a lot of his conversations of what he's talking about. But we also get an impression about Joe, which is why in this minute, it's very interesting. I mean, I'm surprised that Sally lasted 5 years with Joe. You know, not to Joe here. Sorry. Sorry, Joe.
I'm surprised if she lasted 5 years with me, too.
She definitely gave it the old college try.
Right. No, but I mean, the impression that we get when Harry met Joe, you know, a few weeks ago was the idea that you know, they knew each other from they were living in the same building. But it sounded to me like the two of them were what's the proper term for it? The two of them were probably going out, you know, hunting for women all the time together. That's what it made it seem.
Yeah.
You know, that they're right. Prowling the entire time. You know, that there were acquaintances who were trying to always try and find, you know, women to hook up with and things like that.
It is funny to me in retrospect that, like, at this, in what, 1989, that you had Billy Crystal being like, not like an alpha male, but like he is like the New York guy. Like, right. He is he is supposedly like, oh, ladies, if you go out, watch out for this type of guy, or, you right. know, like.
Well, I think even funnier is the fact that, you know, his character is based on Rob Reiner. Okay, so right. yeah. Rob Reiner, you would think is even less of the alpha guy than, you know, than Billy Crystal is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, was the script originally written for like Rob Reiner as the Harry role, and Sally was like
not really. It was written by Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron, but they based the characters on themselves. So okay. a lot of the characteristics that we get in each of the two characters is based on things that they really did. You know, I've listened to the commentary numerous times. There are actually two commentary tracks on the version that I have of the movie. One of them is just Rob Reiner, and the other one is Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron, and Billy Crystal together. And it's so fascinating to listen to the one with the three of them, because they each start talking about, you know, who gave which ideas for certain dialogue scenes and certain scenes, you know, and things like that. You know, like there are times when Nora Ephron will say, oh, this happened to me, you know, and things like that. That's so
interesting.
You know, it's funny. The two of them were in other relationships at the time, and they said that had either of them been single at the time, they probably would have ended up getting together like Harry and Sally did in the end, because they themselves were good friends.
Speaking of Rob Reiner, can we talk about the decision of what books are?
Of course,
like
of course. I mean, we talked a little bit about it last week, but sure. We can get into that too. I mean, first of all, I did look up most of these books, and these are all books that came out in like the beginning of 1989. You know, most of them
went to a bookstore and were just like, these ones.
That's right. Yeah. They're like, let's go to the sex and relationship area. That's where, you know, Marie and Sally are going to be perusing through books. You know,
yeah,
and things like
that. I googled one or two of them. I don't think most of them are in print anymore, so you
right.
have to like do something.
I think most of them you can probably find on Amazon or even use copies of them and things like that. I found some prices for some of them. I don't think that they're probably worth the money, you know, 33 years later. But you know, it depends on who you are. Maybe you want nostalgic books about when Harry met Sally.
It might be interesting to see the best like self-help advice in 1988-89.
Well, I mean, like, some of the books, I mean, these are books about, you know, how to dating in the age of AIDS, and you know, these are all things that are very topical for 1989. You know, which is
the one
like
right
you said
under
Which one?
Right under the book she's holding. I thought for sure it said Stargate, and I was so disappointed that it wasn't like. Well, but I found out like Stargate isn't even based on a book. So
right, no, it is Stargate, but it's not that Stargate.
Yeah. Man, so it is called.
It's maybe Star plus Gate. So I don't know that. That's one I couldn't find.
Man, you know, there must have been a lot of disappointed people at the library over the years when they put that on hold and they get it. And right. It's not about Stargate.
It even has, like, a very sci-fi typography for way Stargate's written. Like, yeah, I would have thought, like, that's that the movie Stargate's based off that book.
Wouldn't it be really funny if that is the real book that Stargate was based on and somebody actually just put it in the wrong place in the bookstore? And
right. Yeah.
And it's sitting in this pile of self-help books, you know, about how to get a better relationship.
I also like how maybe in earlier minutes you could see it, but like how sometimes we can't see the full title, so you're left to figure it out yourself. Like, I'm so wonderful. Why am I?
And I did. Like, I found some of them. I Googled a lot of them and found them because there are different shots. So in some shots they seem cut off, and then in other shots you could possibly see a little more of them. You know, so I was able to get some of the full titles.
All right, so if I'm so wonderful, why am I? What's the title on that? Why am I alone?
So I'm going to have to actually look at my notes from last week to try and remember what it's called, because I do have it written down.
And then also there's one.
If I'm so wonderful, why am I alone? That was a book that came out on the 20th of April, 1988.
Okay, and then there's Making Life Right When It.
When it feels goes wrong.
When it goes wrong, okay.
Yes, when it feels all wrong. When it feels that one you can actually see the full title.
Right. I also enjoy there's a book, a big book, you can just only see the side by Carrie Fisher, Divorcing.
Yes. there's also a Dr. Ruth book there. Not here. Actually, when we see, you know, Harry last week looking out from personal growth. There was a Dr. Ruth book that was just sitting there on the shelf, which was something that just came out right around then.
We should write a self-help book.
It was called Sex and Morality. Who is taking our sex standards? Who is something our sex standards? I don't remember what it was.
Who's taking our sex energy?
is there money in self-help books still? Like, I know, like, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it seemed like there was a lot of money in it. I just don't know, like, if it still is, or now it's just
a lot
like,
of it is like TikTok. Social media influencers. Like,
no, I think now you have to pay money to, you know, to get online courses in self help. You know, they say, you know, here's one free
class.
That's right. Here's one free 5-minute video, and pay us a few $100, and we'll give you another 10. You know, that type
of
thing.
Which living Hollywood figure could do the master class on divorcing? Like, James Cameron's got 5, right?
Or is
yeah.
Like 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd want to actually listen to him for that long. You know.
I want Michael Douglas to do a master class on oral sex
and cancer treatment.
That's right.
I mean,
that might work. You never know.
I mean,
but he denies that's what it is from. You know, so.
We lost the goat. We lost Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah. I mean, how much would you pay for a master class on divorce from Elizabeth Taylor?
Yeah, that'd be good.
What about Mickey Rooney? You know, there's another one.
Yes.
Oh,
boy.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in Hollywood that we could, you know, try to, you know, put together a master class about.
Liz Taylor has an angle, though, in that she can talk about divorcing the same person twice.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Lessons learned. The second time I divorced this person.
Yep.
That's next level stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are bonus episodes that you need to buy. those are an extra $100 for each one. So, I mean, part of this whole conversation between the two of them, it moves back and forth between, you know, being like a happy conversation and an awkward conversation. You know, because like Sally seems somewhat excited about the fact that Harry is talking to her. I mean, first of all, she thinks he's never going to remember her. Now, I mean, I've brought this question up to other people in the past also, but maybe you guys have an answer about this. What's strange to me is that, okay, they spent 18 hours together you know, on their fictional trip between Chicago and New York, which in their world takes 18 hours, but in ours takes about 12. I don't know where they were going. I mean, we found out that they were going via San Francisco or something like that, because there's a shot, you know, when they're in the diner, they're next to a bridge, you know, from somewhere, I think, in San Francisco. So, you know, they spent 18 hours together, and then they spent, let's say, an hour and a half on the airplane together. Okay. And that's it. And she expects after 10 years to remember him and for him to remember her. Like, I'm sure you guys have bumped into people that you were acquaintances with for probably even longer time than the two of them have spent together. And you're saying to yourself, I don't know where I know that person from. You know, you're not going to automatically say, oh, that's Harry Burns.
When you look like Meg Ryan, I guess maybe you're just used to people remembering you. Maybe that's the answer to that.
Okay.
Right.
All right. But she keeps changing her look also.
Yeah.
You know, so
I also think that makes it a little, because like there's definitely times, like I remember, this is only a 4-hour trip, but like there was a, like the older sister of a girl I went to high school with that I like got a ride with her back home, which is like 4 hours. And we had a lot of fun conversations. It was fun. I don't remember her name. Maybe I do. I just remembered it. But like, if I saw her in public now, I don't know if I would recognize who it was. Yeah. That's 4 hours versus 18.
But would she recognize you, you think? Would she say, oh, that's wrong?
No, I don't think so. And then I think, but on the other hand, is like, it's not like they were just like, you know, when we first meet them, they're going together because like they know people in college who know each other.
They both know Amanda.
So like, I think that changes a little bit, because like Amanda, you would keep seeing throughout college, and she would bring up, you know, Harry or bring up Sally. So like, it'd be a connection to like talk about it and like keep that going a little bit. I mean, I've also like gone to conferences and made friends with people and hung out with them for like 3 days, and I don't really remember them.
But that's my point here. You know, the fact that the two of them, you know, they're in New York. It's not like, no offense, it's not like they're in the middle of Wisconsin, you know, where you're going to see somebody and there's more of a chance that you might recognize somebody. I had the same thing here in Israel, you know, but New York, where you have millions of people, what are the odds that you're going to bump into someone that you, you know, spent 18 hours with 5 years earlier, or, you know, you're on a flight from New York to wherever, you know, I think the script says that they went to Washington, but we never get real in the movie. They don't explain specifically where they flew to.
But so. Also like, I think, but that's kind of the point though. They do remember each other because it was like an important 18 hours.
Apparently.
Right. I mean,
for sure.
I think there's two things going on. One is all of us, our brains have kind of been fried, and we forget what it's like before the internet.
Right.
And like that, like just being trapped somewhere with like nothing to do. And I mean, like, you know, 18 hours, number one, just with anyone, I feel like if they're halfway interesting, that'll kind of imprint on you.
Right.
Like I'm terrible with names, but I'll remember like, you know, what people look like and what we talked about, especially if it's interesting and spirited conversation. I've taken the Greyhound between Madison and Minneapolis several times, which is, since it stops everywhere, it can be up to like 7 hours and feels like 18 hours. but I mean, I remember that guy who said he was LL Cool J's personal chef and was also a palm reader.
But if you bumped into him again, would you recognize him?
I think I would. I mean, there wasn't anything super like outlandish about his appearance, but I, you know, if I heard his voice and saw him, I think something would click. And then the other thing the reason they remember each other, as the movie implies, is that they're both instantly horny for each other.
Correct. And even though only Harry's willing to say that.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're both immediately attracted to one another, which helps a lot with the imprinting.
Yes. Okay. There is something to that. I can understand that.
I also think we're older too, which we're like what, 10 years older or so than they are at this point. Like they're what, early 30s, 30?
According to the script, she is right now 31 and he's 36.
Oh, he's 36. He's five years older.
Yeah. He's fine. And I mean, Billy Crystal is like 13 years older than Meg Ryan.
How does that work? How does that work script wise? That doesn't make any sense.
It makes sense because he finished his law degree and she was only finishing her bachelor's.
So she was undergrad and he was grad school.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Again, that's what the script says, but you know, the difference between the two of them is even larger. You know, you have a 13 year difference between the two of them. You know, I don't know. I never would have thought to put Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan together. You know, that's not, forget about the age. You know, you wouldn't think that it would work, but it apparently does.
Right.
You know, because they have great chemistry here for sure. You know, okay.
Nowadays it would be like Ryan Gosling or someone like that. Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds and Meg Ryan. They would, you know, do the opposite. They'd have the woman older. You know, that type of thing. It's possible. It's possible. And I mean, as we go through it, the conversation starts off with the two of them in the bookstore and then just switches to them talking in a cafe. Okay, so according to the commentary, this cafe is called the Amsterdam Cafe, which is in New York.
Still to this day?
As far as I know, it's still around, yes. The bookstore no longer is. The bookstore, Shakespeare and Company, this branch closed down. It closed down, I think, about 5 years later or something like that.
The documentary You've Got Mail showed that happening.
That was what You've Got Mail was based on. That's actually what it is. Nora Ephron, you know, was very upset that they closed Shakespeare and Co. and decided to, you know, use that.
Yep. I'm saying another Nora Ephron joint there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The, you know, it's interesting to think about it that, you know, she was, you know, she made a script and then based on something that happened in that movie, she decided to think of another, you know, something that happened to one of the locations in the movie. She decided to write a whole new script.
Right.
You know?
But I mean, to be fair, that script is based a lot on
Shop Around the Corner. Of course.
So.
Yes. The fact that the general idea is from there, but you know, when it comes down to it, you know, she's looking at it and says, "Hey, wait a second, you know, this is one of my favorite bookstores and they've closed it. So, you know, why don't I do something like Shop Around the Corner, you know, dealing with my favorite bookstore." But what's the irony of it is that there are two other Shakespeare and Company branches in New York that still were around after they closed that one, and there's even one in I think Philadelphia.
Oh, it's a chain. She lied to us.
Exactly. Well, come on, poetic license, you know.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, I guess so. And I mean the conversation that, you know, it flows really well, especially the way that they just move them into the cafe. You know, and they talk about, you know, at this point, Harry gets
a very smooth transition.
Yeah.
Like you know, if you weren't paying attention, you might not even notice that they switched location because it's just like an uninterrupted conversation.
Right.
It's also probably disarming for her. Like, you know, this version of Harry she meets here, a lot of that bluster is gone. Right. This is a humbled Harry.
Yes.
Harry's got the
kicked out of him, you know, just based on last week when he was at the Giants game, that Giants game takes place at the end of October. So, you know, so this is, you know, late fall, I guess you can say, probably early November or something like that. You know, it's just been a few weeks for him. So he's not having an easy time with this.
No,
you know,
no,
which is really funny because when we eventually meet, you know, his ex-wife, you say to yourself, what did Harry see in her, and vice versa? What did she see in Harry?
Right.
You know, it's more with Joe and Sally, you can sort of see them together, but with Harry and Helen, I don't know, a little less. That's what I think, at least. You know, and also you can hear the depression in Harry's voice with his answers. You know, he goes, "Not so good. I'm getting a divorce." You know, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah, no.
Billy Crystal is actually really good at acting depressed.
I agree. For sure. And he does this movie gives him a lot of opportunities for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially later on when he moans. Practicing his moaning. So that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about for this minute?
I don't have anything to add to this minute, no.
Nothing that we haven't already covered.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's fair. So the script has some discrepancies here. The conversation is a little bit differently. You know, there are a few interjections here and there with, you know, Harry, instead of saying, you know, how are you? It's how you doing. And then, you know, when Sally says that they broke up, she goes, oh, gee, that's too bad. I mean, small little things that I'm sure, you know, the actors themselves did it. But then things, there's a whole chunk of dialogue that they cut out here. So when Sally says to Harry, after he talks about the fact that he just got divorced, she goes, oh, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. When did this happen? And he says, a couple weeks ago. And she goes, ah, that's right, when Joe and I broke up. And he goes, isn't that amazing? And she goes, not really. Everybody in New York breaks up at this time of year. Maybe it's the pressure of Halloween. Yeah, you never know what to go as. And then Sally goes, what happened? And he goes, she left me. She fell in love with a tax attorney. A Sheldon? And Harry goes, a Sheldon? Ah, yeah, right. Well, Ira, actually, but it's the same. And then Sally goes, I'm sorry, Harry.
A Sheldon.
And then it mentions the fact that they move into they're in like a restaurant and they're having either coffee or wine. You know, it doesn't really make a difference either way with the way right. that they do it. But I mean, I like the fact that in the script, they bring back the Sheldon aspect and that it's Sally who's bringing it up, meaning, you know, as
she obviously remembers too.
That's right. That those 18 hours are actually something that she remembers fondly and remembers this whole conversation about Sheldon, you know, mm-hmm. Sheldon the Wondersong. So, and the fact that Harry doesn't remember it says something also. You know, because I mean, right. we see throughout this movie, Harry says things that sound very profound, but then later on he forgets that he said them.
I think it's interesting about the age difference too. Kind of makes a little more sense that too, right? You know, she's an undergrad and she's hanging out with this like law student on the way back. It probably has like a more of an effect on her too when you're that age.
True, but she also she despised him. She didn't. Well,
allegedly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, what do you mean allegedly? If she really was interested in him, she would have agreed to go to a motel with him. You know, unless she was good friends with Amanda, which I don't know how good friends they were.
Between despising and not wanting to have sex with them that day, you know, like okay. I just, you know, I don't.
The movie wouldn't have been as good had they actually slept together there. You know, they needed to keep that sexual tension, you know, going for another 10 years.
Yeah, it can't be when Harry met Sally, then they banged.
That's right. Yeah.
when Harry banged Sally.
That's right.
Sally. It's a 14-minute movie.
You know what? There probably is a title like that there somewhere.
Probably is. Definitely.
I'm sure there's a parody out there.
Yes. A parody? These are probably, if you guys want, you're willing. I'm willing to let you guys do the minute by minute version of that one. I'm not going to go through.
No, you do that one.
No. No, thanks. I'll pass on that one. But thanks for the offer. All right. Every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests, or in this case, one of my guests, will give their top five Meg Ryan movies, Meg Ryan performances. So today we're going to actually hear from Rob. So what are your top five Meg Ryan performances? Start from number five and work your way up.
See, well, the thing about Meg Ryan is like as ubiquitous and as much as like a major actress she has been in my life, I have not seen nearly as many Meg Ryan movies as I thought I did as I was like doing this research. I did see Kate and Leopold in the theater, though. Okay. That does not make my top five. That's fun fact, because that movie's not very good. And weirdly enough, directed by James Mangold, which is one of the strangest.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is bizarre.
He is big director for higher energy at times. Like, yeah.
But okay, starting at number five, I'm going to go. This is probably too low, but it's been a really long time since I watched it. So I'm just slotting into my top five. And if I rewatch it, I'll probably change my mind. But Sleepless in Seattle, number five.
Okay.
Her performance in that. I'm going to go with her in Top Gun at number four, which is like a forgotten Meg Ryan. I mean, now it's not because Top Gun Maverick's out, but I feel right. like people forget.
I was ready for you to be contrarian and make that number one.
Number three, I'm going to go, you know, this is one I think we did a Patreon episode on. So, you know, always you're promoting, but her in The Doors. opposite Val Kilmer. Number two, I'm going to go with the movie we're talking about today, When Harry Met Sally. And then number one, guys, and another movie we talked about, so I'm promoting it as well. You've Got Mail. I think she's great and You've Got Mail. Big fan of her hair and You've Got Mail.
Yeah, I think she's much cuter there than here. Yeah, I agree with
and
you.
And also, Joe and Duff have already heard me say this, but like I watch You've Got Mail, and that's kind of like the end of her run, kind of, like as a star. And
she had a 10-year run, and that was it.
She's delightful. She's cute. She still looks great in that movie. And then opposite of her is just bloated old Tom Hanks. Looks like hell. Looks like absolute hell. And his career just takes off. And Meg Ryan's just like, that's it. Too old. Too old to begin any more training. You're done.
I was going to say, like, the end of her run, like, fairly, you know, the gag is that, oh, women turn 40 and they're done. That's pretty much what happened with Meg Ryan. She was born in 1961.
Well, she turned 40 and then decided to, you know, have an affair with Russell Crowe. That's what really did her in.
I mean, that too. But, yeah. I mean, really, you know, it's just, you know, you're only America's sweetheart until you're 40 or so. I mean, Julia Roberts managed to drag that out longer and did the successful drama transition better than Meg
Ryan. Yeah.
Russell Crowe met her and masked her and command her.
Gladiated her.
So, yeah, it was my top five Meg Ryan.
Right.
Solid. Good list.
All right. That's great. And because of the fact that I have, you know, three guests, so I decided that today we're going to actually also do some off the beaten track stories. Off the beaten track. This season, we're doing off the beaten track dating / courting stories, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them over the course of their life, somehow related to dating or courting. So, Joe, you have a story for us?
Yeah, I thought I'd just tell the story of my shortest date.
Okay.
This actually happened twice, but the second time I had had enough with it. So
with the same person or two different people? Oh, okay.
Two different women. So
I thought maybe it was Elizabeth Taylor. So, yeah.
I picked a young lady up, I don't know how long ago this was, probably at least a decade, and we're going to go out to dinner or something like that. I don't really remember. And I picked her up, gets in the car, we drive like a block, and I like glance over, and she hadn't put her seatbelt on.
Yeah, like, get out.
Like, are you going to put your seatbelt on? And she's like, no, I don't wear seatbelts.
And you slammed on the brake, and she went right through the windshield, and that was it.
I was like, how do you, like, in this day and age, you don't wear a seatbelt? And she's
Lord
like, well.
Lord's year of 2010.
And she's like, she said, well, if it's my time, it's my time. And I was like, I wish I had said this, but I was like, well, it's time to take you back home. I basically thought that. I was like, nah, I don't think this is going to work. And I just, like, did a U-turn and just went back and dropped her off, which she thought was a joke. two blocks or three blocks back to her apartment. I was like, no, I'm not joking. Like, I can already tell, like, we're not.
You made the right call. There's only going to be more bad decisions if something that simple is being thrown to the wind.
Yeah.
I don't need that, like, chaos energy in my life, or at least I didn't at that time. So she was pretty upset.
I don't remember. Maybe you told me that story, Joe, and I forgot it. That's remarkable. I love
that
stuff.
But you said this happened twice. What happened the second time? The same exact thing? Did she have the same excuse?
The first time, it was the second time a woman had gotten in the car with me and not worn their seatbelt. And the first time it really annoyed me, but I was like too soft. And I just like went on with the evening. I was like, well, it's her life. And then the second time, the part of what made me mad is like, this is happening to me again.
Where am I finding these women who don't want seatbelts?
I'm guessing the date with the first one didn't go well, which made you be like, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, it's just like life's too short. I'll just go home and play video games or something.
It's safer. It's safer.
I had a little more hairy energy than Sally, I guess. I was all right with being alone.
I mean, there's absolutely nothing good can come from someone with that mentality. I kind of liken it to Rob, your stance on face tats.
Yeah.
Have there ever been a face tat in a person and they're not a mess?
Yeah. No.
Like, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he had the same thing happen where, like, someone got in his car and it was an awkward, and the person told him, he's like, I'm not a seatbelt guy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wild. Well,
like it's he offered someone a cigarette. It's like, nah, I'm not a smoker.
Well, not me. That's a little different.
You go ahead, though. I don't mind.
Exactly. All right, Joe, thank you very much for that story. That was great. And you know, hope it never happens to you ever again.
I should be good now.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about on a date. I'm talking about just in general, you know.
Yeah.
You know. My 10-year-old daughter actually told me she had a dream that I once stopped and made one of her friends get out of the car because she wouldn't put on her seatbelt. So, yeah. And I think I would have done that.
I mean, you know, even beyond the whole, like, oh, you might die thing, you know, your insurance premiums are going to go way up if that happens.
That's true.
It's also, like, not uncomfortable, and it takes a second. Like, it's not – you're not going out of your way to do it. Like, it is a very simple thing to do.
Right.
It's, like, a wild thing to be like, nah, I don't do that. It'd be like if – this is different. It'd be like if someone had a drink. And you're like, oh, here's a coaster. And you handed them the coaster, and all they had to do was, like, lift their drink the quarter inch to then put – and they're like, no.
No, I don't do coasters.
I don't do coasters. Like, just lift your drink and put it on.
There's a ring on the table. There's a ring on the table. It was meant to be.
That's right. Well, any advice to anybody who goes through this, you know, this story that Joe just told us, if it happens to you, then what I recommend is you just slam on the brakes, and then you let him out. See, that could have been you going through the window. All right. So, Duff, you have a story also for us. So, sorry you have to go after Joe. Hope you can beat it. Yeah.
I think I'll just – I know I've shared this on one of our shows, but there was the time I ended up going to a high school dance. It was an ill-advised choice for me to attend in the first place because I was a freshman. This person was a senior. And it was kind of like a situation where this person was just damaged in many, many ways.
Did they have a face tattoo?
She did not. Well, she may now. Who knows? but I think it was one of these things where at the time there was someone I wanted to go with and she was courting someone else. So I was, you know, moody teen courting. About it. And I was like, oh, I don't even want to go to the dance. And then I had an elective class, which is why I was even around like this person. And she was like, well, if we just kind of like went together and it wasn't a big deal. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. Just cause like, I didn't think clearly about it. And I decided to go. And it turns out that like the long and short of it is that she was pregnant and was going to be dropping out of school in a few weeks or so. And,
needed someone to blame.
No, she wanted it was a horrible, awkward evening on every level, but like the subtext, which again, like I was just so dumb and clueless when I was 14 or 15, like she more or less said like, this is like my last chance at a good time before I have to drop out of school because I'm pregnant. And I'm like, I'm just gonna get my friend's dad to take me home now after this dance. So
wait, did you find out at the dance that she was pregnant or you knew beforehand?
I'm not actually sure. Like, okay. It was
came out on the dance floor.
By the way, I'm gonna tell everybody that you're the father.
Yeah. More slippery.
Yeah. All right. That's great. So you guys want to you know, tell everyone how they can get in touch with you guys.
Right, yeah. We've got various podcasts, but the one we are currently working on and have been for quite a while is a free podcast. You can just go to freepodcast.com and you'll see all the links to whatever your podcatchers are for that. But essentially every we do little seasons, and each season has a theme, and then we talk about a different movie within each episode. So, for example, we just finished up Another Dimension, which is about people who directed Twilight Zone episodes, the original Twilight Zone. And so we talked about movies like Cool Hand Luke and Out of the Past and The Hitchhiker, and sort of tied all that into the original Twilight Zone run as well. So we have 5 episodes on that. We have multiple other seasons that like Work Sucks and Going Online and How to Be a Dad and all sorts of things. So check that out, freepodcast.com.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very, very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So you guys feel like coming back again tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Do I have to wear a seatbelt?
Well, it depends on what speed are we going. Does that make a difference, Joe? If you're going really slow, is it okay?
You know, I'm not fighting that battle a third time, so Dust can just do whatever he wants.
Just be careful not to go through the windshield, though. How's that?
I'll do my best.
All right. So, until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having, too.
I'll have what she's
Gave
having.
Give me a thrill with all your faults. I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.